Fantastic. Thanks for joining us. Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Nick?
You know, things are on the up and up. We just got a contract through Local 290. We had a vote on Saturday. It got approved. We'll be getting a 3.5% increase per year for the next 6 years.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's pretty good. So, I mean, along with that, we'll get a little bit increase on our check. We'll get our healthcare fully funded and a small bump to our pension as well. So everybody is pretty excited. It got voted through with about 80% for it.
Nice. A big win for collective bargaining.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I promised that we would talk about healthcare, and we are going to do just that. The specialist here, Jamie, can tell us some things about that, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, glad to. My background is I was a labor negotiator for about 5.5 years for AFSCME. I also served on the OEB board, that's the Oregon Educator Benefits Board, so kind of benefit design, plan changes, negotiating healthcare, and now I'm currently working for the Coalition of Kaiser Permanente Unions.
Great.
All right.
That can make you definitely well qualified to answer some of these questions everybody wants to know about.
Yes, indeed.
All right. So I'm in a union, and we have great health care. Incidentally, we have two options. We can either get ours self-funded, and under that scenario, we have the option to go to any doctor that we want to go to, but we're only covered something like 80%. And there's a deductible as well. Or we have the option to be covered through Kaiser, which is what I choose, because then all I have is a $20 copay for anything. And
beyond that, it's taken care of.
And beyond that, it's taken care of. So that works out very well for me. There's some people before that option was available. They already picked out their doctors. I understand doctor loyalty. I wouldn't want to switch doctors now.
So, Nick, what you're basically describing is the difference between a preferred provider network and an HMO.
Okay.
So, a healthcare management organization, that's typically what your Kaiser Permanente plans would be.
Okay. So, that actually has worked out fantastically for me.
Oh, good to hear.
Yeah. I know overall it's fairly expensive for us. A lot of our members think so anyways, but... somehow they subsidize each other. Actually, I think the members that choose Kaiser actually help to offset some of the more expensive costs that are... What's the other one that you...
Preferred provider.
Preferred provider. Some of those claims turn out to be very expensive, and so we actually help... But that's the point of a union, is to help subsidize.
Right. I mean, that seems to be, for a lot of different regards, that's the point of the union, but that seems to make sense.
But what are some things that groups of people can do to help keep their costs in line or even down? I don't know if this ever happens. Do premiums ever actually go down?
They actually do. Since in my new job, I've actually seen quite a few premium reductions, or either flat rates or negative rates going out. So
wow.
That can happen. It doesn't always happen. And it tends to be driven by a few key factors for any insurance plan. So it's all about utilization. What kind of services are being used when? So ER visits, obviously going to cost a lot more than your primary care doctor. Taking those maintenance medications are going to be much more cost effective than if you wait and you have to be hospitalized. So those types of decisions that individuals make on their plans make a big difference in the long run.
Okay. So if you can stay ahead of the curve, like what do you call it with a human being? I would call it planned maintenance if I was working on equipment.
I suppose that can apply to humans as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, preventative.
Preventative, yeah. So if you take advantage of the preventative, you're keeping your usage down.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important to get those scheduled routine visits, even if you don't think anything's going on, to check in every once in a while just to make sure that you're accurate in that. I know a lot of times, you know, guys will be, I'm so tough and I don't need to be seen.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And this is no challenge to your manhood. This is just saying things happen in your body that you can't necessarily fix on your own. And so it's a good idea at those first signs to get it looked at early.
It's the same thing you would do with like your car or your bicycle.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's not an affront to your manliness at all to take it into someone who's a professional who knows what they're doing, if it's not catastrophic at that point.
That's true. It actually just happened with my coworker, Brad, if you're listening. You better be.
Brad.
Way to call him out.
I know. Well, he had to leave work early the other day and left me by myself,
Brad.
Because he said his wife was driving the car and the check engine light came on and she's like, I can make it.
Uh-oh. He's like, I know, I'm taking that in right now.
Yeah. That's funny.
That's a smart move on his part.
Yeah, okay. So we want to stay up on the preventative maintenance for ourselves then. Are there other things that can help keep the costs of health insurance down?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know we're talking to union folks that are listening on the air tonight. So I would definitely encourage you to look at how is your plan designed. So whether it is an HMO system or whether it is a preferred provider network or an exclusive provider network, which is even smaller, those narrow networks you might hear about, any of those, the way your costs are tiered out. So what's your copay for your primary care versus urgent care versus ER? If your urgent care and ER are pretty similar in copays, and the urgent care is so much more convenient and there's way less people in the way, or the ER vice versa, right? What's the differentiator for who's making that decision and why? Knowing that the ER is going to cost significantly more on the back end, but that's not what you're thinking about. You're just like, I want to do what's convenient for me. So you can drive those decisions a little bit through plan design.
Okay.
And those are things that you can actually negotiate over. A lot of folks feel like, oh, it's not in my contract, I can't bargain over it. But as we know, the status quo, and if there's a change to that, you can demand a bargain.
Okay, yeah, everything is negotiable then, it sounds like.
Everything's on the table.
I think one of the things that a lot of units might experience, bargaining units I'm talking about, as a member, I'm not actually a part of the medical bargaining at all. Like, I don't even know what goes on in that.
You just
get
offered a plan, and that's sort of what you say.
Well, yeah, like the office, yeah. I vote for the business manager, and then he sort of takes care of it through a committee, through a health trust, and we actually just bargain for a dollar amount, and then the health trust says, well, we need X amount of money to cover the plan that you have. But as a body, I don't think we ever actually vote on what we want.
Yeah, it's a little different with employer-sponsored plans versus employee trust plans or labor and trust plans. On your labor and trust, you have exactly what you were talking about, the negotiated flat dollar amount that's going in per member.
Right.
And then the plan design is actually co-managed between management side and labor side on how that works out. But absolutely, as a member, you can say, hey, let's just look at our plan design. Let's see if this is the most efficient thing, or even call for a subcommittee to be involved in that process. Through an employer-sponsored plan, it's typically your employer that's picking that plan and saying, this is what you got. But realistically, as a union, you can actually push back on that. You can ask them to go out for an RFP or request for proposals on different bidders, seeing if you're actually getting the best plan and or look at a different plan design.
Do you find that happens often? Do the general body of unions push back against it, or do they kind of just take whatever plan their management puts forward?
In my years of negotiations, I definitely found that my groups that I inherited were used to just saying, okay, this is what it is, right? I actually had a little bit of healthcare background prior to my union work, so I pushed back and encouraged my coworkers to push back on this, because there are a lot of areas where you can actually drive those costs and look at cost savings. If you have multiple plans, let's say you've got four or five different carriers, so health insurance carriers, I'm not going to name any in particular, but you have four or five different of them, you're thinking, hey, we've got a big population, this is fine. Well, actually, what you're doing is you're spreading out your cost. So if this is the same problem that small employers have. An employer size of, let's say, 25 or less, you've got one person or two people with really significant health needs, that's driving up the cost. And the way a plan works is you spread that cost out over the entire population. So as you divvy up your population smaller and smaller amongst many carriers, you're actually hurting yourself and reducing that spread that you can do. So it's better to look at, you know, what's the right formula. There's no one size fits all for every group, but definitely look at, if you're starting to see your rates tick up and you've got multiple employers on the table, is it worth it? Are you a small enough group that maybe going sole carrier would be your best, going for one insurance carrier? You get a multiple plans with that carrier because they can rate them all together.
I suppose the field in which the union actually works probably affects that a little bit too. I mean, if you work in an industry that is a little bit more hazardous than the general day-to-day work you do, you probably would want to opt for a more collective or a like one or two providers so you can spread that over more people.
Yeah,
so there's more chance to. Sorry, no.
No. I was like ready to jump in.
No, yeah, absolutely. Please do.
And there are other options too. Looking at going to an occupational health clinic, right? So encouraging your members to actually, when there's an on-the-job injury, don't just go to your primary care because that's what you're used to or your regular clinic. Look at going to an occupational health therapist. They're specialized in getting you back to work. Mm. They're not specialized in every single thing about you, and they're going to get you in and then talk about how was your ear infection from last week and right. Blah, blah, blah. They're going to look at what's that problem that you're presenting with and get you back to work as soon as possible. And that actually does reduce, so your claims don't get mixed up with workers' comp claim versus your regular health insurance, because right. That can be messy, time consuming. Yeah.
So a thought popped into my head. We're talking about the number of people that you have helps to spread the cost over. So if you've got two people in a group and you've got $1 million claim, you're looking at $500,000 per person. But right. If you got a group of 10,000 people, all of a sudden that's only like, $100 per member then.
If my math serves me.
Do unions ever work together? Like... I'm in the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a case where we might reach out and say, okay, electricians, let's all go in together now, and instead of having two groups of 4,000, we'll have one group of 8,000?
Absolutely. Merging trust is actually, I've seen it happening a little bit more lately. So I happen to know like the painters, the glaziers, and the floor covers recently merged their trust together for exactly that. It's your purchasing power. This mm-hmm. is very similar to what happened in the state. So PEB, the Public Employees Benefits Board, and OEB, the Oregon Educator Benefits Board, there was legislation that was passed to allow other local governments to join into these large boards. And it's a significant savings if local governments do take advantage of that, typically, and they're going to get a much richer plan design. So in some cases, they may actually pay a little bit more for their premium, but when they look at the benefit they're getting, that's a huge savings. You have to look at the entire cost of your plan. Oftentimes, folks are like, oh, just what's coming out of my pocket, right? Yeah. And then I'll worry about copay and that sort of thing.
Of course.
You really got to look at what's your max out of pocket. That's the most that you're ever going to have to pay if worst case scenario happens, you use your healthcare a lot. Mm-hmm. And so this is an insurance plan, just like your car insurance, your homeowner's insurance. You got to look at what's that deductible, what's that high amount you're going to have to pay, and be prepared to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
So your max out of pocket is going to be huge. You want to look at what other costs roll into that. Does your co-pays on your health insurance for seeing the doctor's visit, does that roll up into your out of pocket your max out of pocket or your deductible? It should. It should roll into your deductible. So if it does, that's a huge savings if you can get a plan that'll do something like that.
Okay. So that's definitely a great way to save money then.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's so much information here, and this stuff is great to think about, you know, and that's funny because like, have you ever been hurt at work?
Yeah, certainly. Not anything it's too severe to keep me away from work for too long, but absolutely had injuries on the job.
Oh, sure. And I know other people that have, and they're like, well, I don't want to be on the radar.
Right.
I don't want anybody to notice. I'll just go to my own doctor afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that would actually cost your plan more money, because now there's more utilization. There's more that they're paying out on your behalf, where you could just go to the occupational health clinic.
Correct.
And then... is being paid for out of the employer's insurance.
That's something that I think working in non-unionized workplaces, you probably see a lot more of that mm-hmm. in terms of people getting injured on the job, not wanting to ruffle feathers or rock the boat, and just taking it to their own personal doctor and putting it on their health insurance rather than filing any sort of claim with their employer.
Yeah, you definitely want to keep that separate. I mean, you know, slip and fall, you can get an MRI out of that, and that's expensive. So you don't want that to hit your rates in the long run, and it's going to hit everybody else's too.
Of course. I mean, it'd be the same thing if you were at work and you had to drive, you know, spend money on gas to go somewhere.
Yep.
You would ask your employer to reimburse you for that. It'd be the same thing if you're on the job and you get hurt. You should absolutely go through them as opposed to just dealing with it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at my work on the job, we start every shift off with what we call stretch and flex. It's just a little warm up. Nice. We do a little stretching, get the blood flowing, and I guess they've actually determined statistically you have less injuries.
Oh, of course.
Throughout the workday because of this. And I'm sure there's other categories of wellness. Is this something, or these are kind of things that can actually come into play to get you a discount on health insurance?
Typically, it depends on who the carrier is. So some carriers actually charge for these services. Some do not. Kaiser, I can tell you, does not charge for these services.
Nice.
Well, the goal in the long run is to have a healthier population.
Right.
So if you're healthier, you're probably going to have less catastrophic issues that are happening absent an accident or injury in your health life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good strategy to get around that sort of thing. I mean, if workers are healthier, they're happier, they're more productive at work, it's a win-win for the employer and for the unions. So I would definitely look at it. A lot of employers nowadays are coming up with wellness programs. And I would say if that's being proposed to you in the workplace, don't just accept it, be a part of it. Design it, develop it. Because if they're coming up with, say, walking programs and you guys are very time bound and you can't get away from your workstation, then that's not going to work out for your members.
Right.
And it's not going to be helpful.
Right.
Yeah. It's got to be something that actually plays in or works well with what the occupation you're engaged in is.
Absolutely. And what are people's interests, right? Would they want to do that? Would they rather have a healthy cooking class because they think, hey, if I get the salad at McDonald's, yeah, I'm fine, not knowing how much calories are actually in that salad dressing?
A gazillion.
That's a great point. Yeah, that it's not only just, I mean, like Nick was just saying, you know, physically stretching before going on the job, but it's more than just physically stretching and exercising. It's also what you eat, how you live, you know, how you transport to work. It's all of those things rolled together.
Absolutely. We like to call it total health at Kaiser.
Yeah.
And so it's also looking at what's happening with you behaviorally as well. Are you depressed? Do you have signs of that? What are ways to reduce that? Stress reduction. It all comes into play when you're looking at your body and your physical health.
Yeah, I mean, mental health is part of that too, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Like stress reduction is totally, absolutely affects your physical well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Speaking of eating healthier, I just want to clarify that there are no calories in Reese's peanut butter cups, right?
No, totally. Keep thinking that. Don't worry.
Okay. All right.
You don't want those generic off-brand ones, though. Just the Reese's.
No, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yes. I will say nothing.
Healthcare professional steps back.
Right.
That one.
All right, scratch that. Scratch the last 10 seconds.
I'll hit the dump button on that.
So speaking before the show, we were talking about catastrophic plans. That's a thing of the past, isn't it?
Yeah, that's actually what the Affordable Care Act eliminated, because those plans really didn't cover you. There was none of the preventative. There were no routine maintenance things you could do. It really was if you were hospitalized in a coma or something to that effect where these plans would kick in. And they were very expensive and didn't cover much.
As someone who has had one of those plans in the past and is currently on the next tier above that, the
bronze.
Yeah, the bronze level on the affordable care in the marketplace is not a whole. I mean, it's a step above that, but it's a similar situation where you have a very high deductible.
Yep.
Very. I mean, yeah, you'd have to really be hospitalized before you actually start hitting that, unless you are regularly going to the hospital for other reasons.
Yeah, high deductible health plans are unfortunately becoming very popular, and I think they're really beneficial for one of two populations. If you absolutely never use your health care, so you're that young 20-something, invincible, never going to get sick person, although I have to tell you, that only lasts for so long.
That's only a 20-something thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes not even then.
Yeah, it's
exactly.
True, very true.
One bad cold, anything can do it to you. But and your employer's giving you a health savings account. So a way to help offset that dollar amount, and you can accumulate year over year. So let's say you don't use it for 2 years, you're saving up that health savings account money, and then you have your deductible in place if you should need it, then that's great for those folks. Or someone who's going to easily hit that deductible every year, and the coinsurance, so that's the portion of after you hit your deductible, how much are your services paid for? So 80-20 is a typical split. You pay 20, plan pays 80 or 90-10. The lower you can get that in your favor, the better that plan is, or if everything's covered after deductible. But those are pretty rare anymore.
So it really does affect, I mean, it benefits the young 20-something who doesn't get sick or thinks they won't get sick.
It could, except for if they get in one accident. Right. Think about this. Yeah, I mean, I don't snowboard anymore, but if I did and something happened to me on the mountain ride, even if I'm in my 20s, how am I going to pay for that?
Yep. Yeah, even if you're walking on the street and, you know, something happens, you slip and fall onto the sidewalk, you know, off the sidewalk into the road, and you get hit by a car or anything like that, you can never plan for it.
Yeah, I'm certainly not advocating for this.
obviously, yeah.
I am one of those people that has my deductibles for my car, my home, all that in a savings account ready to go.
Yeah,
I would recommend that for anybody. It's budgeting just like you would do anything else. This is a reality and an expense you may have to pay someday. I think who really benefits from it tends to be the employers. So they're able to offer this plan. It's very low cost. They're hitting the mandates that they have to hit for offering health insurance, and the premiums are lower. So this is where I was talking about before, the total cost of health insurance. It is your deductible, it is your premium, it is your copay and your coinsurance. So look at all of that. It whether it's a dollar shift from one person to the other on who's paying, it's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that really is what it costs to have the plan, is the deductible and the premium.
It's all of that rolled together. It's not, you don't just want to look at the deductible or
correct.
The premium. You have to look at it holistically on that.
Yeah, that's your true cost of the plan.
Interesting.
So I think everybody should have good health insurance. I mean, this is one of the absolute certainly. Key things. But can your health insurance be too good? And and what is exactly, what is a Cadillac tax?
Yeah.
Yeah, your health insurance absolutely can be too good. And so those are the tend to be the really open networks where you don't have to have any kind of proof that you need the service you're wanting. So I hurt my back. I'm a little bit of a hypochondriac. I need an MRI right now. I know it's an MRI that I need, not an X-ray, not a evaluation by doctor, but an MRI. And my plan is super open. It lets me do that. Actually, a previous plan I had did.
Wow.
And it wasn't good. So the problem was I could do whatever service I wanted and it would be covered.
Mm-hmm.
There was no justification needed by the plan as to whether or not this was an appropriate test for me. So the problem with that is I felt like it was really disconnected. My doctor was not in the loop, didn't really know, didn't really care. They would just send me to whatever because it was there and it was available. Also in that network, my doctor got paid by visit.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what you have with a non-HMO system is it's called RVU, so revenue per visit kind of cycle. And, you know, typically your doctors are out for your best interest, but sometimes they may just not have the time to see you with that extra thing when you came in for your physical, or maybe they're just wanting to make some money. And that's unfortunately a profit motive that can exist in the healthcare world.
Huh. So that really kind of de-incentivizes or negatively incentivizes the doctor to, yeah, all right, yeah, go get that MRI right now.
Yep.
I'm not going to really engage and pay attention to you as an individual and think about what is going to help you in the long term, but I'm just going to send you to get these expensive tests done because I'll make money on it.
And it matters where they send you.
Right.
So they send you to the place down the street because they have some kind of an understanding with them. And you don't know that they're necessarily charging like three times more than competitors in the area. So you're trusting your doctor. You're just going to go with what they tell you to do. You're not doing any shopping on your own. The difference with that in an HMO system is, or doesn't have to be HMO. There can be PPOs that actually have evidence-based medicine that they're basing it off of. So you have to have some justifications. And people get frustrated by that. Oh, I have to jump through hoops. I have to do this. Actually, it's about saving you money in the long run and making sure you're getting the most appropriate care. So this leads to the Cadillac tax. This is how these plans get really expensive. People overutilize them. Utilization rate goes through the roof. You get those double digit rate increases year over year, and that gets you to these thresholds. So unfortunately, under the new plan, there's no design to take away the Cadillac tax. And so that's really taxing employers or plans that offer too rich of a benefit. And I don't agree with the definition, but it's $27,500 for a family. Oh, I just forgot.
You're talking about $27,500 worth of insurance
Yeah, so what your premiums. Total roll-up would be, your premiums, and if you have any kind of offset of a flex spending account or health savings account. So those are not exempt. A lot of employers thought, oh, I'll go high deductible. I'll almost fully fund the deductible through the HSA, so my employees are not hurt by this, but realistically, all of that's included in there. So and I'm sorry, I just forgot the individual amount.
Individual threshold. That's all right.
That's all right. But you end up paying that regardless. I mean, it comes out.
You do. And so basically it's if your plans offer this value above this amount, you're taxed 40% on that excess. And really that taxation is meant to help kind of pay for the whole system. But in my opinion, it's taxing the wrong end of healthcare.
Right.
So you're penalizing an employer or a trust for having a really good plan.
Right.
And that's not great for workers.
Yeah.
So when I first started reading about the Cadillac tax, they had talked about making an exemption if you're in a high-risk occupation like construction. Is that something that made it in, or do you know?
Well, that's actually was in the original law, and it's not an exemption. It's just a higher threshold.
Okay, it's a higher threshold.
Yeah.
Then. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I got a little leeway then being in construction.
I just thank you, smart technology on my phone. It's 10,200 for individuals.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. It seems like you could actually go through that one fairly quickly.
It strikes me that probably most unionized workers are not necessarily getting that plan, but that's still, you could certainly work your way through that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess you can always shop around for cheaper rates. I mean, that's something that people do on everything else. But is that limited? I've heard that like some insurances can only operate on a state-by-state basis. They can't operate across state lines, but I'm not sure.
That's true.
How that works.
Yeah, every state has an insurance commissioner, and they actually will dictate what plans you can or cannot have. So an insurance company would then apply to the insurance commissioner and say, we want to do this suite of plans. They get approved or not. So when you have those exceptions to plans, so a little something different, not the shelf plan that the insurance company is offering, typically they have to go back to the insurance commissioner to get an exception for that. But yeah, the plans that are in California are not going to be the plans in Oregon and Washington and so on. Right. They will vary a bit. But you do want to be careful when you're shopping around. You don't want to do it too often because basically you're showing the plan, you know, I'm not a loyal customer. I can go at any time. So typically no more than 5 years. You also have to get rate experience. So when you go to shop for a plan, they're going to say, show us your utilization. They want to know what kind of risk they're potentially taking on. And so if you have a good 5 years of records, that will show them kind of what they can expect, and then they'll give you realistic rates. If they come in really low, they're probably just buying your business, and in the following years, those rates are going to go up. I've definitely seen that happen.
That happened with my car insurance.
Well, I don't know that it's limited to this industry.
Yeah, sure. Maybe an insurance-wide thing.
So then one of the terminologies that I hear at my group, and I'm not sure fully how this works, is self-funded. Can you tell us about a little bit about what self-funded is as far as health insurance?
Yeah, self-funded, you will tend to see those with larger groups. So basically, they've saved a pot of money. They decide they're going to try to get away from having an insurance carrier, per se, and they're going to try to run it themselves. Typically, they have to have a third-party administrator who actually does the claims processing for them, and they're typically going to have an insurance for their insurance plan. So this is kind of the high risk, high claims insurance stuff. Mm-hmm. So to help offset that, they want to make sure that they have enough reserves that they can actually pay out all the insurance claims that might potentially happen in that year or the following year. So you want to have healthy reserves to be able to pay for that. But in these self-funded plans, and I used to sit on a board that had a self-funded plan, you actually have to make these decisions or farm it out to somebody else to make decisions about what kind of healthcare people can get. So the worst one I remember having to decide on was how many visits an autistic child could get and up to what age. And we would have letters from the family, and then we'd have the doctor's notes, and that's just a horrible thing to have to decide for somebody. I would rather have a medical professional make that decision.
Right.
Yeah, have it based on the actual need of that child rather than the insurance's desire.
Well, I can't believe it. A half an hour has already gone by.
Man. That was fast.
I know. Every time. And this is what always happens to us.
Yeah.
But We only have about 2 minutes left. It's probably not enough time even to open it up for calls. So
not really,
we'll save that for next month. But hope everyone out there is going to take away something on how to save costs. I guess one of my final thoughts would be, as a part of my union contract, we pay a lot into our health insurance. I think something like $13 an hour is deducted from my total work package to pay for health insurance. And so sometimes I feel like, well, I'm gonna get something for this. And it actually makes me want to get something for it. But that kind of thinking could actually backfire, and maybe that's why I have double-digit increases as a part of my organization every year. Because
right.
if I'm thinking that, and there's 4,100 other people in my collective that are also thinking that, then there's a lot of claims and a lot of increase. It's yeah. just getting passed back to us.
Get right. the right thing for that service, not right. just something.
Right, yeah.
Everything.
I'm telling you, I know what it would be, too. Like, if we had chiropractic on our plan, I would use that probably every month or two.
That'd actually benefit you. Alternative care does tend to keep your costs lower as well.
Right. Huh. I mean, that's essentially preventative care in another way anyways.
It is, and it's just delivered really cost-effective.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's just about all the time that we have for tonight. Up next is going to be Prison Pipeline. But thanks, everyone. This has been Labor Radio. It's been an exciting half an hour, and we'll see you next time.
Have a great night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a benefit concert for Standing Rock Legal Defense taking place Wednesday, March 22nd at O'Connor's Vault in Portland.
This evening of folk and protest music features the Road Sodas, Gary Furlow and the Loafers, and Woodlander.
This is a 21 and over event.
Again, that's a benefit concert for Standing Rock Legal Defense taking place Wednesday, March 22nd at O'Connor's Vault, 7850 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right.